This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
Welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Thursday, November 13th, the Keep Your Head Above Water edition. I'm Dan Coyce. I'm a writer and editor at Slate and the author of the book How to Be a Family. I'm the dad of Lyra, who's 14, and Harper, who's 12, and we live in Arlington, Virginia.
I'm Jamila Lemieux, a writer, contributor to Slate's Care and Feeding Parenting Advice column, and mother to Naima, who is 6, and we reside in Los Angeles.
Hi, I'm Greg LaValle. I'm the director of technology at Slate. I'm the father of Nina, who's almost 7, and Hugo, who is definitely 4. I live in a neighborhood of Washington, D.C. called Mount Pleasant.
Welcome, Greg. We're glad to have you. Thank you for sitting in today.
No problem. My pleasure.
Today on the show, we have a swimming lesson conundrum. Should you push your child to do something that she fears because it's for her own good? Also, how do you deal with it when your kid talks to you like you're some kind of asshole? Plus, triumphs and fails and recommendations. Let's start with triumphs and fails. Jamila, what do you have for us today? A triumph or a fail?
I definitely have a fail, and more fail. We have talked previously about how easy it is for my child to convince me that she's too sick to go to school. I think she's done at least 2 episodes of the podcast since the new school year started because she was sick.
She's our unofficial fourth co-host.
Yes. And we got a letter from the Department of Education. I also apparently didn't know that when you call in an absence, that's not enough. You also have to follow up with a letter. I'm like, but if we didn't go to the doctor, you just need a letter from me saying what I said to the guy on the phone. That seems like a waste of time. I thought we'd progress as a society beyond that and that you could take me as my word. And when I say my child is sick, she's sick. But we got a note and her father's kind of freaking out about it. And I have officially been called by the people. The people have been called on me. It wasn't a note from the school. It was from the board or the Department of Education. And ironically enough, my daughter is actually sick this week and had to miss school yesterday. And when we called her dad in the morning to let him know, like, the interrogation was so justified because I have been so weak on this issue. So we didn't force her to go to school yesterday. She was feverish and snotty and all that stuff. But going forward, she probably will be going to school. Fever, snot, all that stuff.
I just want to congratulate you on setting what I believe to be an all-time speed record and having the people called on you in a new home. That's like amazing.
Just got here.
I feel like this is a rite of passage. This definitely happened to me with Nina. Like, the first experience at public school where, like, the front office woman was like, okay, also make sure you email me. I was like, sure. I was like, really? I'm just going to email you whenever my kid is sick?
Right.
Like, that seems ridiculous. And then 3 sicknesses later, they were like sending letters and stuff. So I wouldn't feel too bad. I feel like this happens to a lot of people.
I think so. But, you know, it won't happen to me again. I think I'm going to have some pre-made letters and just...
Is it like a physical letter? Like an actual printed out in an envelope?
They sent a letter. They sent to her dad's house, which made it infinitely worse because I'm the one responsible for it, and I'm not the one who got the letter. And it was very formal.
Are you supposed to send a physical letter to them on paper?
I am, apparently. Yeah.
Try a postcard. Postage is cheaper.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I just want to, like, no, I don't have to mail the letter. I just have to send it to school with her. But I thought that by calling and saying, hey, you know, Naima didn't just decide to go to Starbucks today when I dropped her off. She is with me. She is ill. That kind of did it. I didn't realize that they needed more.
Well, it's a great combination of the bureaucracy tripping you up. And also, she wasn't sick.
Right.
Yeah.
But she, for anyone who may be listening, she was sick, as far as she told me. And so my only real crime here is believing in my child.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. So in a way,
how dare you?
It's a triumph.
Yes.
Greg, you've been on the program once before. You shared a triumph back then about when you took your toddler cross country. What do you have for us today? A triumph or a fail?
I went with a fail this time. It was way too uplifting last time.
Good.
And I tried to look for fails that are not like those ones where you actually talk about doing something you're proud of, but then talk about how it felt. Like a genuine...
I wouldn't know anything about
okay.
that.
Okay. So Hugo is... He's a stubborn four. Nina was not nearly as stubborn, but I'm learning that like four-year-olds can be more stubborn than I expected. And... It exhibits itself in every single way. So if you want to get him dressed, like it can't be the shirt that you picked out. It has to be a different shirt. And if you want to get him in pants, it has to be shorts. But shorts, it has to be pants all the time, no matter what it is. And it comes out a lot at dinner time. And it's not that he's, you know, needs to gain weight or is a bad eater. He'll eat different kinds of protein as long as it's not the one that you suggested. and so I started this thing a few months ago where I would say like, hey, look. If you eat that bite of chicken, I'm going to be so angry. Like, it's going to make me really – I just don't – please don't eat it. And then, because he can defy me in another way, because I don't want him to eat it, he would eat it, right? And so this goes on for, like, months. And people would come over – like, I would tell him not to eat the food, and he would eat the food because he wanted to defy what I wanted. I wanted him to not eat it, so then he would eat it. Like, it totally works. Like, the huge, like, you know, reverse psychology crazy game that I was playing – and people would come over and they would watch this happen and they'd be like really weirded out at the dinner table. And I'm like, yo, don't you dare touch that macaroni and cheese, my friend. And he'd be like, ah, da, 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 like eating it up. And they would all say, this is going to backfire. And guess what? Guess what started happening like last weekend when I was out of town with just the two kids. And I was like, you know, don't you dare eat that bagel and cream cheese. I just put the cream cheese on it. It would make me so mad if you ate the bagel. And he just like whammed it on the floor and was like, okay. And I was like, no. So now I have like...
Checkmate, yeah. Hugo.
Oh, man.
Oh, no.
And he's been like reversing himself on me a couple times. So like I still try it occasionally. He does it. But now he knows that he can play the game in the other direction. So
I have a question about this.
I think it was a good idea.
To what extent was his initial going along with it sincere belief that you actually didn't want him to eat the food in front of him? And how much was it him enjoying the game that you had created?
It was definitely all the game.
Okay.
This thing started in the bath when he would refuse to, like, wash his body. And I would be like, don't get the bath water dirty. The way to get the bath water dirty is if you start washing yourself with this washcloth that has soap on it. And he would start doing it because it would get the water dirty and it was something I didn't want it. And then, man, it has progressed into this massive reverse psychology failure.
I don't even know if this is a fail. Like, you got him to eat what you wanted him to eat for, like, a month. So now you just got to try some other technique.
It's weird to have positive reinforcement be like getting me angry.
I know. I just mean like nothing has changed from 2 months ago. He still doesn't want to eat the shit you give him. It's just that for a month he did. So like he's winning currently. As everyone knows, parenting is about you winning. So you just need to find the next technique.
First of all, I love manipulation. So thank you for sharing that story. That was awesome. I like tricking children. It is a favorite pastime. And incredibly effective at times. What if you suggested that the food you wanted him to eat was too delicious to share it with him? Like, oh, no, you don't want any of this broccoli, you know, this broccoli is just too, you know, why don't you just have that, you know, just eat that cheese? Like, oh, no, you're not going to like that. I don't know, like maybe just, like it's something you're trying to sneak from him. Like when you sneak and eat cookies or ice cream behind his back, like treating the things you want him to eat, like with that same kind of like, oh, shoot, you weren't supposed to see me eating this. Get out of here.
Sit him at the table with an empty plate and be like, my food is great, but I'm glad you're not going to get any of it.
We have gotten better about just leaving the stuff off. He's like, I don't want that. I don't want that. I don't want that. We're like, okay. And we just leave the plate empty. And about 10 minutes into the meal, he's like, can I have some of the peas? And you're like, okay. And that's been kind of working. But then you got to get it in his mouth, which is a whole different ballgame.
I know that no one actually wants to make mealtime an endless psychological battle.
Right.
That's like an interrogation scene out of Law and Order or something. But like... Nevertheless, that's what it often is. And so to the extent that I have been able to create games out of that event, whether it's a half-serious game like the one that you invented or who knows what, like I've actually found that playing with your food to some extent is actually a much more useful way to get little kids to eat than like getting in an argument about it every week.
Mm.
All right. I have a triumph this week. The triumph is that my kids – finally do their own laundry.
Wow.
Parents of little kids here in the room with me are very excited. Parents of older kids who are listening are like, how old are your kids? And you just, but whatever, doesn't matter. Right at the beginning of the school year, we told our kids that starting now, every weekend, you have to do your own laundry. That is your responsibility. That's one of your jobs in the house. I took them downstairs to the laundry room. I gave them lessons. You know, I explained some clothes you need to wash on cold. You can't wash on hot. You have to hang bras up to dry. You can't just throw them in the dryer. You know, there's all kinds of rules about what you can and can't do. You can't just throw all the unmatched socks in a bin because what kind of slob would do that? But so it worked. The kids now do it every weekend. They find some time, usually when we're like watching Buffy or doing some other kind of inside activity, and they get their laundry done every weekend with minimal hassling. We usually have to remind them once or twice, but we have to remind them, you know, to put on clothes at all. So I feel like that's not any different. And they haven't wrecked any of the clothes. And each Monday they have a bunch of clean clothes that are, I mean, usually wadded up on the floor of their room, but still, I didn't have to do anything about it. I didn't have to do the laundry. The only problem with this is that what once was an occasional dad's t-shirt borrowing habit has turned into a wholesale dad's t-shirt theft habit, as now they just steal a shirt and then they wear it and then they wash it themselves and then they leave it on their floor or put it in their dresser and I never see it again. But whatever, that is a small price to pay.
Are they available to steal my t-shirts? My wife is asking.
She just wants you to get rid of some of your horrible t-shirts?
All the t-shirts. All of them.
There is nothing cuter than a kid wearing your t-shirt, I have to say. So I usually let it slide, except with the very, very best t-shirts.
I wish that kids that were capable of doing chores like that were more readily available for hire. Like, this is the first time I've lived in like kind of a big apartment built. Not big, but I don't know. I guess there's like 20 units or so. And I typically have had just like a neighbor or two, you know, in my building. And like, so there's all these kids. And I want to be like, hey, do you want some money to like come do some of the stuff I don't want to do around my house? But I know that you can't do that because it's not, you know, the 50s anymore.
Wait, why can't you do that?
I don't know. I just don't feel comfortable doing like until I'm like, I feel like I'd have to know the parents well first. Most of them are little boys and they run around and they play and they kind of, you know, I've seen a little googly eyeing at my daughter, but for the most part, you know, they don't necessarily seem pressed to include her in their games and stuff yet. But like, I've got all these moving boxes, you know, piled up and I'm like, man, it would be really nice to like give these kids a couple bucks to break down the boxes or, you know. And so I think about there being like teenage girls out there doing laundry. I'm like, yes, please come do my laundry next.
You could do this.
Jamila, you gave excellent advice in today's Care and Feeding column to an apartment dweller who wanted to know how she could help a neighbor. And your advice was get to know the neighbor, introduce yourself, have a coffee. You have open and available children ready to work for pennies on the dollar. All you have to do is sit for one fucking coffee with their moms. You've got to make this happen.
I may try that. I could certainly use a little bit more child labor until my child is old enough to do it on her own.
It's a big step. It's a big day in a family when you can finally make your kids do child labor.
How did you transition from you doing the laundry to them doing the laundry?
Like, I just said we're not going to do your laundry anymore. It's now your job. I mean, it helps.
It wasn't like a fade out?
No, I mean, it helps. I mean, I am ashamed to say it helps that they have very few chores. So they understand that they've gotten out of chores for much longer than I think many kids that they know. So instituting this chore as a minor addition to the very few chores they already had, they sort of just shrugged and said, all right, I guess it's time. I guess the gravy train's over.
I have this memory of my mother betting we couldn't reach the dial on the washing machine. And as soon as she saw that we could, being like, done.
Wow.
You're up.
So reverse psychology spans generations in your family.
You can come by it naturally.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
All right, let's talk some business before we move on to these listener questions. We are excited to let you know once again that we are going to be doing a Mom and Dad Are Fighting live show in Miami, Florida, at the Miami Book Fair on November 23rd. Jamila and I will be joined by Pamela Paul, the editor of the New York Times Book Review and the author of How to Raise a Reader, and Adam Monsbach, the author of Go the Fuck to Sleep and Fuck, Now There Are Two of You. This is a absolutely free show. Bring the kid, hire someone else's kid and bring them, or just hire a babysitter to look after your kids. Any way you cut it, we cannot wait to meet you, our Florida listeners. Please stop by and say hello and laugh with us and Adam Monsbach and Pamela Paul. Also, apparently Jamila is taking me to the club.
Yes, so please, listeners, if you're interested in joining us and would like to purchase a bottle, I think we're going to have table service available. It's going to be lit. DM me on Twitter, and I'll send you my PayPal information.
If this actually happens, it will be a really great way to see me very uncomfortable. This is 4 o'clock p.m., Saturday, November 23rd, Miami-Dade College. Once again, Saturday, November 23rd, Miami-Dade College, 4 p.m. For tickets and information, go to slate.com/live. Business number two, sign up for Slate's parenting newsletter. It is free. It is fun. It is a letter from me every Thursday. Last week, I was sick on Thursday, and I didn't send out the email, and my inbox was flooded with desperate emails from people who usually get the newsletter saying my life was incomplete without the stupid bullshit you usually send me on Thursday afternoon at like 4:30 p.m. It won't happen again. Sign up right now. Plus, you find out about all the parenting stuff Slate does. Mom and Dad Are Fighting episodes, Care and Feeding columns, everything else. Sign up at slate.com/parenting email. Business number three, check us out on Facebook. Just search for Slate Parenting on Facebook. It is a really fun community. Sometimes we draw questions from that community for the show, but always we are weighing in to talk about the episodes, to answer your questions, and for Jamila to receive abuse from people who love Frozen.
Oh my God. Like, I was not, I don't know why I didn't anticipate that, but I saw one comment and I was like, I'm good. See you next month, Facebook.
Lots of adult Disney fans, apparently, in the Facebook channel. In Slate Plus today, we will be talking about micro dates and other ways that parents can make time for personal relationships, whether you are years deep in the marriage or still in the dating pool. Here's a quick sneak peek of what you'll hear if you have Slate Plus.
If you aren't intentional about saying, I'm not going to let this happen to me, I'm not going to become a sad middle-aged shell of the person I once was, it will happen to you.
To hear segments like that and to get ad-free podcasts, sign up for Slate Plus. That Slate's membership program is a great way to support all the journalism we do. For just $35 for your first year, you can help cover the cost of producing Mom and Dad Are Fighting and other lesser Slate podcasts. And of course, in return, you will get extended ad-free versions of this show and other Slate podcasts and a bunch of other great benefits. So support Mom and Dad Are Fighting, support Slate, support our journalism. Go to slate.com/momanddadplus and join Slate Plus today. That was business number four. That's all the business. Onward. We got two listener questions this episode. This first one was emailed to us. If you'd like to email us your question and have it read by the one and only Sasha Leonard, send it to momanddad@slate.com. As it happens, this question is being read by the one and only Sasha Leonard.
Dear Mom and Dad Are Fighting, I have a question about trusting your three-year-old. We signed our daughter up for a weekly swim class this fall with her two best friends. She was really excited to go, but also a little apprehensive. She's very shy and likes to take things slow. The first class was touch and go, but okay. We stayed in the pool for half the time and managed to do most of the things the instructor asked. The second class started out fantastically. She did all the activities super well and was happy and proud of herself for doing them. But then her head accidentally went under the water. She was shocked and scared. The next class, she refused to go, screaming on the side of the road as we tried to get in the car. The following couple classes, we managed to go and they went okay, but not great. During the week, she would talk about not liking swim class, and I finally said, okay, let's not go. The whole point of swimming was a fun activity, and if it's not fun, then why are we doing it? She clearly doesn't enjoy the experience, and I want to trust that. But part of me feels like I should be encouraging her to get past this fear. I think if she were a bit older, I would try for longer, but she's still so young. I appreciate your thoughts. Treading water.
I have a lot of thoughts on this question, only because Hugo and Nina are both in swim class right now and have been for the last 2 months, with varying results. you know, as I alluded to earlier, you know, Hugo responds really well to tricks. So there's a lot of, like, him sitting at the side refusing to get in the pool and me saying, I'd be so angry if you went up to your feet, then I'd be so angry if you went up to your knees, then I'd be so angry if you actually got in and swam. And that worked.
We're really unveiling your one parenting move.
I've got one.
I'd say it's so great. Good thing your kid hates you.
Right?
So.
It's like when I play basketball, I have literally one move in the post, and it's a fadeaway. And as soon as someone figures that out, I'm fucked. That's it.
Yeah.
It's over.
Well, so this has had varying results. The first class, he went right in. And then a couple classes, he didn't. And then one class, he just sat on my lap the whole time and didn't get in at all. And the instructors would come over and try to physically throw him in the pool, like do that thing where they pick him up and throw him in the pool. I, having had experiences that are not great with swimming in my life, so I'm not a strong swimmer. I won't drown. That's only because I've almost done it twice. Mm. I'm not a very strong swimmer at all, and I think I had a pretty bad swim experience as a kid. So I think my advice on this one is that 3 years old is pretty young, and I wouldn't push it too much. Because what I think the worst scenario is that they swear off swimming for life, which I think I probably did from about age 7 until I was in college. And someone was like, we're going to go jump off an overpass into a reservoir. And I was like, I have to do that. So,
oh,
you know, like,
God.
That's the kind of swimming I was into. It was like, you know, but – and I was like, you guys will save me, you know, just in case things go awry. And they're like, sure. So, like, generally, I think swimming is a really important life skill, just for safety and just generally being able to do a lot of different things. And I wouldn't want to scare them off too early. I think if it was Nina and she was refusing to do it, maybe she's interested in doing something else and just doesn't want to get in there. The other things I would look out for are if the instructors are changing, that can be tough for the kids. So, like, if it's not the same person every time and they don't actually have a routine at the pool, like, are they meeting at the same time? Are those two friends always showing up? Can you text with the parents of those friends to make sure they're going to be there? And can they get into it as, like, a thing to do together, so that it's not just like them in the pool and there's a bunch of like support around it being the same every time is the other thing that I would recommend. Hugo seems to have been a lot better if we can get consistency in his one friend in the class showing up because he sees him get in the pool and then he wants to do it too. And then also having the same teacher every time. And don't let them throw them in the pool.
I feel very torn about this question, and I'm amazed actually at the extent to which my youth swimming experience mirrors yours, Greg. I also really didn't like swim lessons when I was a kid, and I think was a huge pain in my parents' ass about it and cried and whined and didn't want to go in, and they eventually gave up on it. And I didn't really learn to swim until I was like 13 or 14, and even then I wasn't very good. And then I went to college, and it was not that I wanted to jump off a bridge into a reservoir, because that's crazy.
That's awesome.
But it was that my college required you to pass a swim test to graduate.
Oh. Yeah.
And I did not take that swim test until the last week of senior year, and it was very touch and go as to whether I was going to pass that swim test and graduate college. I could survive, but maybe not as long as the swim test required you to survive. You know, but I did, and now I'm an okay swimmer. I also have never particularly felt comfortable in the water in a way that I see in other people and envy in other people. And my wife, for example, who grew up going to a pool, who was a lifeguard in high school, who was a competitive swimmer all those years on a swim team, and who now is just like a fish in the water and has passed that on, thank God, to our kids. They did not inherit my fear of it. And so I feel torn because I do think that having bad swim lesson experiences turned me off of swimming, but I also think that the net result for my life was worse than it would have been if my parents had just buckled their seatbelts and been like, fuck it, Dan, you have to go. We are not letting you not go until you learn how to swim. You have to become comfortable in the water. You don't have a choice. You have to do it. If they gave up and I got away with like not having to swim for like 10 years. And I don't know that that's a better solution necessarily. And so I agree that 3 is young. I agree that things like ritual and consistency are really important. I really agree that having a friend who also comes along can really help a lot. But like, you know, when we lived in the Netherlands, every kid in the Netherlands learns to swim when they are 3, no matter what, because in your town in the Netherlands, there's always a canal without a railing on it that you can just fall into. So just everyone learns. It's just something everyone does. And whether your kid hates it or loves it, you make them do it because it's important. And this sort of feels like one of those situations to me, but then it's not my kid screaming on the side of the road. Jamila, what do you think?
You know, I had parents that didn't really force me to do too many things that I didn't enjoy or take an immediate interest in. So, like, I wish that, you know, my parents put me in, like, a taekwondo class when I was my daughter's age, and I would just sit on the floor until it was time to go. And after a few weeks, the instructor just said, hey, you know, mom, dad, she doesn't want to do this. You should take her out. And I got to take, like, clown class or some shit, you know, instead, which was great. But, you know, I wish that I knew taekwondo at this point in my life.
Not
right?
Clowning.
I
you don't need the clowning.
Right. So I don't. Much, yeah. I didn't need to be taught to clown. but, you know, and swimming was something that, for whatever reason, I picked it up along the way. You know, like there was camp at the YMCA. There was a pool at my elementary school that was typically not in service. And I think I eventually learned in, like, middle school during, like, a summer program. Swimming in particular, not just like saying you should encourage your child to stick with something despite them not really liking it if it has practical application to their life, but, like, you know, not knowing how to swim is just so dangerous. You know, my college also had a program like that. Strangely enough, because I was a theater major, we didn't have that requirement, but the majority of the school had to, you know, pass a swim test and
you just, like, act your way out of the water.
I guess they're like, you're not going to be able to afford to go swimming, so.
That's bullshit. I was a theater major and I still had to take the fucking test.
We did not have to take it. And it's so weird. And I think what makes it even sadder is that, like, I went to Howard in D.C. The requirement for us was created, you know, many years ago because so many African-Americans drown because we don't have, you know, access to swimming programs and pools like members of other communities often have, and just have a kind of a distaste for swimming for a number of reasons. So it's you hear tragedies every summer about somebody's kid being too close to the water and not knowing what they were doing. I agree also that three is very young, and what you don't want to do is create trauma around water. But I would basically do what the two of you all said and, you know, see, is it about who's in the class this week, who's teaching it, is there a lack of consistency here, you know, is there something that we can create, maybe there's another swim class elsewhere that you may like better, and worst case scenario, perhaps revisiting this at five, you know, because I think one thing you should also consider is that three-year-olds are articulate but cannot explain everything, you know, that they're feeling in the way that they'll be able to do, you know, or that they'll be closer to being able to do that in a couple of years. So if somebody's having some anxiety or issues around water, it would be ideal that they could explain to you, you know, on some level where that comes from. But I wouldn't let this go for good. Even if you end up deciding that right now isn't the time, this isn't something to just let go and hope that they pick it up along the way, or that they, you know, they take a swim class in high school and all will be well.
I think that's a really good point about this is not the same advice as we would necessarily give if this was a question about maybe any other activity, right? If you've got a three-year-old who's not into piano lessons, I don't give a shit. Take your kid out of piano lessons. But swimming does seem different to me. It seems more important. It seems potentially life-saving. And it seems something that's going to dramatically improve a person's quality of life for their entire life. I mean, it almost feels like my kid doesn't like their walking lessons and I don't want them to learn how to walk. Like, it's almost at that level to me.
They quit CPR lessons. Yeah. You're like, dude, you got to learn this.
You got to. Sorry, everyone learns CPR at age three. That's just the way it is in this family. All right. I hope that was helpful to you, Treading Water. Thanks for reaching out. If you would like us to be potentially helpful to you as well, email us at momanddad@slate.com. That is where we got this next question, which is once again read by the one, the only, the inimitable, the incredible, Shasha Leonard.
Dear Mom and Dad Are Fighting, what advice do you have for dealing with kids when they respond disrespectfully? When I ask my daughter, who's 7, questions, sometimes she responds really rudely and in a very unkind way. How do you respond to that in the moment? Thanks so much.
Well, I certainly have no shortage of experience in dealing with a sassy little girl who is at times very quick to respond in a disrespectful manner when she's asked to do something she doesn't want to do or interrupted in some way. It's difficult, and you're going to find that you're going to have to try out a lot of different ways of communicating your disappointment and the appropriateness of language with your child, and really coming to understand what their communication style is and how they're able to receive this information. I think the biggest thing is making sure that you, one, keep your cool. You know, disrespectful language is not an invitation for yelling. You're not going to get the result that you'd like from that. You're not going to do anything but perhaps create more tension and drama in a situation that doesn't need it. And two, that you don't stoop to your child's level unless it is appropriate. So there are times where, you know, a kid can say a little taunting comment and you can say, well, that's why, you know, you don't know how to tie your shoe. No, I'm just kidding. Don't say that's why you don't know how to tie your shoes. But it depends on your kid. It depends on your kid. You know,
because
they're
depends on the kid.
Some kids can handle sarcasm. Some kids can, you know, give it and give it, you know, with equal ease. But children are so sensitive, and they also don't quite understand the gravity of what comes out of their mouth, you know? So to them, it may not feel disrespectful. It could just be simply saying, I don't want to wear this stupid shirt you bought. The shirt is stupid. I am telling you something, you know, this is very plain and simple. You have poor taste in shirts. You've presented me with an unfortunate option for, you know, school today. And I don't want to wear your stupid shirt. I'm not trying to hurt you. I'm not trying to undermine your authority as a parent. I'm 7. The shirt is stupid. The end. Can we watch, you know, Teletubbies or Frozen? You have to tell them there is a way in which we speak to people we love. There's a way that we speak to adults. There's things we have to think about when we're talking to other human beings, period. You know, that we want to be kind, we want to be clear, we want to be honest about our feelings, and we have to figure out ways to do that without hurting someone's feelings or insulting them.
I think that's all really good advice, and I want to focus on one thing that you mentioned there, which is the ways in which how we respond to this creates not only kind of feedback loop, but a kind of model for our kids and how they talk to us. I know a lot of parents who are very, very, very good at responding to any disrespect from their kids or to an ugly comment or something mean with a very calm, that's not the way that we speak to people in this family, and I'd like you to try again in a more polite way. I often don't have it in me to do that, right? I have a much more visceral response when my kids say something awful to me. It never really dawned on me when I was, before I had kids, the extent to which, like, my own kids could hurt my feelings. I thought that was crazy. I thought, well, they're just kids. How could they hurt my feelings? But in fact, they do it all the time. And I respond viscerally. And so I often have to really stop and think to myself about how I'm going to respond to something. And am I going to respond to this the way I would respond if I was talking to an adult who understands the different ways that we use sarcasm? How is it different from how I would understand if I was online? How do I respond this different than I would respond if I was with one of my friends who knows me and knows the sort of a different levels at which I communicate? Or how do I want to respond to a kid who doesn't exactly, as you say, know the gravity of what they said and is looking to me at all times to see, well, how do I relate to another person, a person I love in my family? What do you think, Greg?
I think we have, you know, experienced similar things. It is very easy to just be like, what did you just say to me? Which is definitely not the right thing, because all it does is get them to repeat it louder, right? Usually. With one strategy that my wife started doing and I really like is that when either the kid says something rude, like even just a quick comeback, or like, they love this, Hugo loves this word disgusting, like shirts are disgusting. I taught them repugnant the other week because I was sick of him saying that.
But don't call anything repugnant, you said. I'd sure hate that.
So we say, you know, close your eyes, pretend I'm your teacher, and try again. And they, like, they respect their teachers way more than us.
Oh, that's totally true.
Yeah.
And
it's been, like, a really helpful strategy to just, like, you know, first it started with, like, would you say that to Miss Whatever? But then they'll just be like, yeah. Like, but if you actually make them role play that, like, I'm your teacher, try that again. Like, why would you say that if you were in class or if your teacher tried to hand you a jacket, and would you call the jacket disgusting? And they every time they're like, oh, God, I would never say that to Miss Gardunias. So I think, like, that's been helpful. So, like, find another adult in their life that they respect and try to get them to role play what they just said to you to that adult. Like, imagine your teacher standing in this kitchen and handing you this cheese stick that is the wrong color, right? Mm. I know it's a white cheddar cheese stick. That's probably actually somehow better for you. But let's try again.
And string, which is a breed of cheese we don't quite. Where does the string cheese come from?
I love that. I love close your eyes and imagine you're talking to your teacher to whoever, to your grandma or to.
Yeah.
You know, I really
even
like
that checkout lady at the grocery store, they're nicer to
right.
her
yeah.
than they are to us. Oh, so yeah. It's sort of like, yeah.
I've become very sensitive to this lately, the approval seeking that kids are doing with their teachers, with maybe friends, parents, or other adults who don't love them unconditionally, you know, or who they don't take to love them unconditionally, or grandma, who's just a soft place to land, you know. So we love them the most and we pour the most into them. And at times we get, you know, the least from them in terms of like kindness and respect. But I think that even at 7, you can start to explain that. I love your approach to that. I'm going to try that because, you know, we haven't done the role playing, but I've said like you wouldn't speak to, you know, I can go down a list of people, you know, and it's typically mom and dad and sometimes not even the stepmother. You know, it's like these two, I will give you my butt to kiss, and everybody else, I'm going to tighten up a little bit. So just the reminder of like, you know, not saying I want to make you feel guilty and didn't I throw you a birthday party or, you know, but as I've reminded my daughter, it usually goes like this. I may have told this story on the podcast before, and I apologize to everyone if you've had to hear it twice, and I apologize to everyone who's going to hear it for a first time. But I, you know, I'll make a small sign with my hand, kind of like the okay sign, which has been ruined forever by the white nationalist movement. You know, it shows you, you know, how small that little circle is between your pointer finger and your thumb. And I'll say, Naima, what's this small? She'll say, a vagina. And I said, and who is the one person in this world who expelled you from a hole that small? And that's me. So it's not always about laying that guilt, that much guilt on them, but also just like, hey, nobody loves you like we do. And we're going to always love you. And that doesn't mean that it's okay for you to cast our love back in our faces by treating us with this sort of, you know, meanness.
My strong feeling is that you should tell that story every episode, actually. Yeah. Here's the one thing the last thing I would like to add to this, which is that I think this question, the answer to this question is different with young kids and with older kids. Mm-hmm. And it's different in a way I didn't expect at all. With young kids, I think it totally makes sense basically every time they respond in a way like this to do some mild correction to remind them, this is not the way we speak to people we love. Close your eyes. And would you speak this way to your teacher, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. When you have a tween or a teen, I never understood until I had tweens and teens that you just got to eat a lot of shit when you're the parent of a teen and a tween, because the hormones raging through their bodies turn them into such oppositional monsters that if you like picked a fight or tried to correct or dealt with every single time they were rude to you, you wouldn't have time for a job. Like you would have time for nothing else in your life. And you just have to sort of grit your teeth a lot and be like, this is adolescent rage speaking. I know that she still loves me. You just got to let it go. And I find myself like swallowing my response so much with my kids who are on the scale, very well-behaved teenagers and tweens, but are still assholes to me all the time because that's that age. That's the way I was. That's the way all of us were when we were that age. Perfectly nice people now, gigantic assholes when we were 13. And the extent to which, as a parent of an older kid, you just have to take it is painful but almost always necessary, I find.
How do you and your wife employ guilt tripping with the girls? Because I think about, you know, as a teenager, that was the point where, and it's funny because we've laughed about it over the years, but there were times where my mother would cry, you know, because of how I spoke to her, just have these very dramatic moments. And it turned out that she was bullshitting, you know, like she just wanted me to feel guilty about how I was acting. And she was putting on a show, which I respect and admire as somebody who likes shenanigans. But at the time it was, you know, a bit more effective than her simply saying, I don't like how you're talking to me.
That's interesting. I don't think I've ever had to, in the moments where my kids have said or done something truly awful that truly made me feel like shit, I'm not actually that good at like masking my feelings, and they see it and know it and usually respond immediately. And I haven't had to fake it that, like, I don't think I really have used that often, only because it's been a technique that I've used, but like, by accident, because there have been times, you know, maybe once a month, one kid will say something that's just so awful to me or to my wife that it actually makes us like makes our jaws drop and makes us look legitimately upset, maybe makes us cry. And they were like, recognize, oh, I guess I maybe that was one step too far.
Yeah, that's great, though. You know, I think so many parents of older children and smaller children feel a need to put on, you know, a stiff upper lip or just, you know, to perform what responsible, mature adulting and parenting looks like. So you're not going to see me, you know, you won't see a crack in the facade. Right. I'm disappointed. I can say I'm disappointed. I'm angry. I can say I'm angry. But like sad or vulnerable, you know, like we don't necessarily want to be that way with our kids. But I think it's important that they see us in that.
And that's what we do sort of keep up that facade when the comments are like the usual teenage bullshit. And that's, yeah. It's like that level of comment that's had to be what we train ourselves not to respond to.
Because it's too much. You would literally just be a mess.
All right. Hope this is helpful. Thank you so much for writing in. Good luck with your disrespectful, shit-talking 7-year-old. Don't worry. It's only going to get worse.
Talking about money can be so hard, especially when the person you're talking to is still learning how to do long division. That's why Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace, is here to help. I'm Bridget, and with my fellow co-host Ryan, we help teach your little ones about complex topics like bankruptcy, climate change, and why there's so much gold at Fort Knox, and so much more. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's move on to the part of the show where we each choose an item in our lives that we like or enjoy and offer a kind of recommendation to share with other people. We call this segment Recommendations. Greg, what do you have?
I'm not log rolling for myself, but I am recommending a toy that a friend of mine makes. So an acquaintance of mine is like one of those people who like went to clown school and juggles, and then now he is making a thing called a shishibo, and it's like a puzzle, and it's for...
Gesundheit.
Yeah, shishibo, right? Yeah, it does sound slightly sneezy. And it's like a magnetic game. It's really great for the car. It's pretty good for kids, like the 3-year-old to 4 loves it, all the way up to Nina, who likes it too. So I would say like in that range, but it's basically like a puzzle, geodesic puzzle game, and you can make, you know, you can make this thing into like a star, you can make it into a cube. We have 2 at home. You can combine them into other things. The kids love them, and they keep playing with them in the car a lot, which is good because you can just sort of keep it in the car. It's small. It's hard for them to break, and it, like, sticks together and makes all these fun shapes. I don't know. He was like, you should check this thing out. And as soon as I played with it, I was like, I need these for my children. And so got 2, and, like, now we give them as gifts. So when we traveled this summer, we brought one for, like, the friend that we visited. So hopefully we can put a link in the show notes, but I recommend the shishibo.
It's spelled S-H-A-S-H-I-B-O. I'm looking at it now, and I would describe it as psychedelic magnetiles that don't fall apart and, in fact, are just connected so that you don't lose them.
Yeah, it's like a less frustrating Rubik's Cube.
Yeah.
With magnets.
It looks cool. I like it.
Very cool.
Good recommendation. Jamila, what about you?
So, you know, as I've mentioned many times, I'm new to California. I live in the greater Los Angeles area, and I grew up in Chicago, spent my adulthood in Washington, D.C. and New York. So I have relatively limited experience with going to malls. It was a thing that we did on occasion when I was a kid, you know, here and there in college, you know, very rarely living in New York of all places. And so I would like to recommend going to the mall because now that I live in the I'd say one of the most suburban, it's not a suburb, but it's suburban-ish in ways that I'm not used to. And there's all these malls, and L.A. is also kind of boring and not the most walkable city. So like as somebody who likes to meander and walk around and, you know, like shop a lot of places, I don't just want to go to one store if I need something. I'm either going to do that online or I want to, you know, like go to a lot of stores. And they've got these big structures where all the stores are like inside or they're like all next to each other on these, like, you know, they call them strip malls. And it is amazing. It is such a great distraction for my child, even though, of course, it comes with the whole, now I want to, you know, can I have something from here? Can I have something from here? But it is just a wonderment. I'm like, wow. Thank God we didn't have that. Like when I was a teenager, I didn't do that. I would have never graduated high school. I'd be working at the Orange Julius because what a magical place. There's so much. Sometimes I don't even buy anything. I'm just happy to be in the presence of all this capitalism and people and colors. And, you know, I don't know. Like, is this a unique experience that I am like truly delighted by malls? And I know that there are parents that are like,
I would describe that as
I'm in a liberal news media bubble.
The least unique experience you've ever described.
This is, I mean, because I am astounded by it. Like, especially, you know, it's a great place to go with my daughter. If it's just kind of like, I don't really have an activity for day, or we need some towels, you know, we can have dinner there. We can, you know, get a little thing. They've got a place you can sit and play. If you go by yourself, like, again, I live in California, so I'm smacked. So, you know, get a little weed, go to the mall, and just, wow, there's stuff with, I'm trying on stuff with sequins. I don't have anywhere to go. You know what I mean? But it's just there.
Malls are sort of canceled in like middle America, but they're alive and well in California. They do great.
There's so many of them.
There's a lot of them. I'm so delighted by you just now discovering malls. I can't even express how great it is to me.
Wait till I get a car and I can actually bring some shit home from the mall. That's gonna be.
Wait, you're in California without a car?
I know.
I am. Well, I've only been here for a month. Okay. But to be fair, I've only lived here a month, and I have not driven in 12 years. So, if there are anyone who's interested in, you know, if you want to be a supporter of Care and Feeding, and you're a car dealership or brand, now is the time to get in, because I will ride very hard for you, because I have to purchase a car for the first time as a real adult, and it's terrifying and daunting. And again, I haven't driven in a really long time.
There are so, auto malls.
Bob's Beverly Hills Hyundai is going to be a sponsor of next week's Care and Feeding.
We could only If the Compton Lexus dealership is listening, please, my DMs are open.
I'm delighted that you love malls. I also found malls lifesavers when our kids were little. In fact, when we lived in New York, we were lucky enough to have a car while we lived there. And we would often drive upstate to the Palisades Mall, a fantastic mall in the Hudson Valley, and just like hang out there for a day with our kids because there were a million things to do. And in winter, when we were stuck in a tiny apartment, we were often at a loss, and we would kill whole days at that mall and not buy anything except for like lunch at P.F. Chang's. It was great.
This is definitely a cry for help, and I miss New York so bad. Yeah. I can't sleep at night. Help me, God.
Sorry,
Jamila. I am going up for a place that has a Build-A-Bear and Auntie Anne's. What have I done to my life?
I have two recommendations today. Two games. One is for littler kids. One is for bigger kids. The one for little kids is called Boom Blast Sticks. It was introduced to us by our friends Mike and Acadia. That's sticks with an X. Because it's extreme.
Nice.
It's for littler kids. It's a canister full of these little springy plastic triangles, and you pinch them closed and then stack them one on one on top of each other. But at some point, one of them springs undone and blam, all the little triangles fly everywhere and like peg you in the face and stuff. It's great. Everyone screams. Everyone cracks up. Kids love it every single time. It's delightful. Good for like ages 4 to 9. Any younger than that and your child will definitely swallow the little triangle. That is not a legal recommendation to the makers of Boom Blast Sticks. It is not legally binding. Mom and Dad Are Fighting is not liable for any swallowing that does occur. The game for older kids is called Telestrations. It was introduced to us by our friends Claire and Dave. I would describe Telestrations basically as Pictionary plus telephone. So you have these little notepads. You get a phrase, and then you draw it as best you can in like 30 seconds. And then you pass it to the next person in the circle, and they guess what you drew. And then they pass it to the next person, and they try and draw that thing that they guessed. And then they pass it to the next person, and then they guess what it is that the last person drew. And it just gets more and more degraded and stupid and funner the more awry it gets. Great game. Everyone loves it. Ages 11 and up. We'll put links to these as well as to all these other recommendations for Greg's friend's game that he gets 10% of every sale of and for malls on our show page and on the Facebook page. Yeah.
I get nothing.
Yeah. That's our show. If you have a question you'd like us to answer on the air, leave us a message at 425-255-7833. No one does that anymore. They just email us at momanddad@slate.com because they love Shasha. Join us on Facebook. Just search for Slate Parenting there. Mom and Dad Are Fighting is produced by Rosemary Belson. For Jamila and Greg, I'm Dan Quayle. Thanks for listening.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.